SEA Files, the ultimate Seahawks podcast with Nate Lundy.
From HawkBlogger.com, that is also how you find him on Twitter, at HawkBlogger. It is Brian Nemhauser. He is the founder, the editor, the managing director, the janitor. He is everything for HawkBlogger.com. That's how most of this stuff works. Brian, thanks for making some time. Let's start here. If you had to give a letter grade for what you saw in the preseason from the Seahawks, what would it be?
So that's a challenging question, because I think, you know, if you grade a team overall for preseason, you're looking at, you know, complete team performance. So in that level, I'd say you're talking about a B. If you really break it down to the things that mattered most, the biggest questions that the Seahawks had to answer going to preseason, you know, it starts and really ends with the offensive line. And there, you know, I give them an A or even an A+, in how much progress they made from where they started.
Impressive that way, because you mentioned it's kind of hard to give these grades sometimes, because so often, you know, the first team guys you only see for a very short period of time. But I was going to ask you about that offensive line, and where they stand. Where do you still have any concerns, if you do overall, when it comes to that line?
Well, anytime you have a line that's featuring now four of the five players who are playing either new positions or are new to the NFL, you know, there's going to be questions, and those can't really be answered until you get into the regular season, and those guys need to play together. So, you know, even as optimistic as I am after having seen them during the preseason, there are going to be questions until they start playing games that count. But, you know, what we saw in the preseason that was remarkable was, you know, the interior of that line, Justin Britt at center especially, but Jermaine Ifedi, their first-round pick at right guard, and then Mark Lewinsky, a second-year player at left guard, were creating running lanes that honestly just haven't been seen around Seattle for a long time. And, you know, Marshawn Lynch made a living getting a lot of yardage after contact. I think this line could end up giving Seahawks running backs, the young running backs, more room than Lynch ever had, and I think that bodes really well.
When you look at those running backs, I feel like we've had this discussion for a handful of seasons in a row when it comes to Christian Michael, but it appears like everything is finally clicking for him to really finally step up and be maybe what they'd been hoping for quite a while.
Absolutely. I think there was never any doubt about Christian Michael's physical talents. I think there was always question about whether he's willing to put in the work necessary to be a professional athlete as opposed to just an athlete. And, you know, he went through the crucible last year of seeing really what the end of his career could look like at age 24. And now he's back, and you know, it's remarkable watching him and his burst compared to any of the other backs, you know, and they had some good ones on the roster. He's just at a different speed and a different level in terms of lateral agility. So I think he's going to play a prominent role this year. How much, how many carries a game, we'll have to see, but he'll definitely be a part of the offense.
And when we look at that, you know, you take a step back, and sometimes people look at that running back position through the eyes of fantasy football, and you just said it, you're not really sure exactly how many carries he's going to have or what the balance is going to be. But if you had to predict it, how do you see Pete Carroll using this overall committee that he's got? Do you think that a guy like Christian Michael will eventually emerge and be, say, 60 to 65% of the carries, or is this really truly going to be a committee?
Yeah, Seattle's an interesting one there, because you got to remember Russell Wilson is going to get 20% of the carries, you know,
very
off
true.
The top. And so what I've got currently predicted is around 40% of the carries for Thomas Rawls, about 30% of the carries for Christian Michael, and about 10% of the carries for C.J. Procise and Alex Collins, most of those going to Procise, and the remaining to Russell. So, you know, I think that game to game, you'll likely see Rawls at around 15 carries, and Michael might be, you know, 7 to 10. We'll kind of just see how that plays out. And at any given game, if one of those guys is playing better than the other, or their running style's working better, you could see that flip. And the thing that's interesting with both of those players is, these guys are both high yards per carry guys. I think both of them could be north of 5 yards a carry, and the league hasn't seen a running back pair do that and get 150 carries in a season since the Panthers, you know, with I think it was D'Angelo Williams and Jonathan Stewart a few years back.
What is the latest right now on Jimmy Graham?
Well, the latest is, you know, Pete Carroll came out and gave a number that was interesting. He said after the Raiders, the final preseason game last week, he said he was about 10 days behind where Thomas Rawls was. Now, Thomas Rawls has, you know, been back doing active practice for a number of weeks, and he got his first game action against the Raiders. You know, I think it's fair to guess, you know, reading between the lines with Pete Carroll, that Jimmy Graham won't play in the first game of the season. I think there's a better than 50% chance he'll play in the second game, and I think there's approaching, you know, assuming there's not a setback, 100% chance he'll be back by the third game.
What about the fill-in in the interim, Wilson, et cetera? Is there confidence there, or is it we're going to shy away from the tight end for a bit until Graham is back?
Well, people forget, you know, Graham was obviously out the second half of last season, and the Seahawks were scoring over 30 points a game during that stretch, and doing a lot of it through the air, as well as a lot on the ground. So this is an offense that always starts and ends with the running game. And they're in good shape there. And in fact, they're in better shape in part because of the tight end position. They added a guy, Brandon Williams, who had been with the Panthers for a few years and is primarily a blocking tight end. He's going to help a ton. And so he'll act as the second inline blocker. Even when Graham's back, he'll have a prominent role doing that. And the Seahawks haven't had a strong blocking tight end since Zach Miller retired back, you know, after the 2013 season. So, you know, that's a pretty critical role in how the Seahawks like to play, and I think they're in good shape there. Luke Wilson is, you know, a solid player. He's not going to blow the doors off, but he can definitely contribute. And they've got a rookie, Nick Vinette, who's got a high ankle sprain, so he might be out a little while, but he's also, you know, promising as a receiver when he comes back.
You know, you talked about the fact that this offense, you know, really starts and ends with the running game, but obviously there's some talent at wide receiver as well. Break it down for me. When you look at Baldwin, you look at Lockett, you look at Curse, overall the wide receiver position, you know, give me an idea of, you know, the balance you see there, Brian, and how these guys will be used when they do decide to air it out.
Yeah, there's no reason to expect this, you know, right, wide receiver crew will be anything but what it was last year, right? And a step forward from that even. So, you know, that's not to say Doug Baldwin is going to have 14 touchdowns again. That was quite the stretch he went on. But, you know, he's going to be the Doug Baldwin that he has been since he came into the league. He's a very difficult player to guard. He creates his own space and is reliable to be where he's supposed to be. And now that Russell is getting a little more comfortable with rhythm throws and letting go of the ball on time, you know, that's part of how he and Baldwin became such a lethal connection last year. Tyler Lockett entering his second year, this guy has star potential. I mean, he is, I think, every bit the player that someone like John Brown in Arizona is. They don't have the volume of passes that the Arizona offense does, but Tyler Lockett's a dynamic player. And Jermaine Kearse is Jermaine Kearse. You know, he's not gonna get a Pro Bowl nod anytime in his career, but he does what he does. And the real change there that's one to watch is last year they had a real, like a journeyman fourth receiver in Ricardo Lockett, and he did his job as mostly on special teams. Now they've got a former second round pick in Paul Richardson, who's back from injury and has got, you know, the most speed in that entire group, and he has the potential to, you know, play a nice role as a complementary player, making some big plays down the field.
We know how well known this defense is, you know, over the past several seasons. But when you look at this defense this year, are there any weaknesses that you see, or any places that to you are a question mark, or is it as solid as it's ever been?
There's definitely some weakness compared to previous years. With Bruce Irvin moving on, their strong side linebacker, the Sam linebacker position, was vacated, as well as the rush nickel defensive end role. Irvin played both of those. And Mike Morgan, who's been a career backup at linebacker, will come in and play that Sam linebacker role. He's just not the athlete that Irvin was. And you know, that role is expected to set the edge. It's expected to play a little bit in coverage and, you know, rush the passer a little bit as well. And, you know, Morgan is a significant step back from Irvin in all those areas. So that's something to keep an eye on and see if teams are able to get to the edge a little bit more with running his way. And then, you know, I think pass rush is something to watch. Michael Bennett and Cliff Averill are still here, and both are, premium pass rushers. But who's going to be that third rusher? Who's going to be the fourth rusher? And, you know, Frank Clark is being relied on as a second-year player to really step forward. And they believe he can be one of the best pass rushers in the NFL, but he had all 3 sacks last year. So he's got to prove it, just like the offensive line does. And until he does that, there are definitely some question marks in that pass rush.
Last one for you. As you get ready for the game against the Dolphins this weekend, you know, biggest concerns that you think Seattle has with Miami?
Yeah, it's pretty clear anytime you're facing Ndamukong Suh that he's near the top of the list of concerns. And when you've got a new offensive line and you've got an entirely new interior of that offensive line, exacerbates that concern that much more. Certainly was something I had on my mind before the preseason started. The Seahawks, you know, start with the Dolphins and then they go to the Rams and get Aaron Donald and Michael Brockers, and they've got the Jets coming up in week 4. So there's a lot of defensive lines that are going to test this offensive line early. It starts week 1. I think that the Seahawks are well set up, especially playing at home, to handle that. But, you know, that combination of Ndamukong Suh and Cameron Wake and, to a lesser extent, Mario Williams is definitely something to watch.
Really appreciate the time. Brian Nemhauser, the manager, the editor, the co-founder, everything for HawkBlogger.com. Check out the website and make sure you're following him at HawkBlogger to keep track of everything going on with the Seahawks. Brian, really appreciate the time. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Stick around. Coming up next, the coach, Brian Billick.
Around the league.
It is time for us to go around the NFL, and we do that every week here on the NFL Files with the coach, Brian Billick. You follow him on Twitter, at Coach Billick. He's brought to us by our friends at SeatGeek. Coach, we are here at week 1, and as I was making my notes getting ready to chat this week, I realized that we are sitting on a whole lot of quarterback news. So let's start with the trade. Your thoughts on Sam Bradford going to Minnesota?
I think it's a great move. I think it mainly is an indicator that shows you just how good Minnesota thinks they are. A lot of people coming in, including myself, thought they could be not only a playoff team as they were last year, but a Super Bowl contender. And I think Sam Bradford actually enhances that. It's tragic to lose Teddy Bridgewater the way they did, but they were still betting on Teddy Bridgewater to come a little bit. You know, he only had 14 touchdowns last year, and I think he was going to get there. I think Sam Bradford in this system, and I think that's an important part for his ability to turn around and hand the ball up to Adrian Peterson, make the big throws down the field, for them to play good defense, I think it's a great move for them.
And looking at what the Eagles then did, for some on the outside, Coach, it almost feels like the Eagles have said, okay, this is our season, maybe this isn't our season, but they're putting a lot of faith in Carson Wentz, who only took 39 snaps in the preseason. Are you surprised?
Not really. I am an IA, and I'm not, from the standpoint of anytime you take quarterback in first round, you got to play that guy. I mean, otherwise, I was up at Philadelphia's training camp, and they seemed fully committed to not playing Carson Wentz if that's the way it came down. Remember, Doug Peterson was one who came in 1999 with the Philadelphia Eagles for Andy Reid to basically be a placeholder for Donovan McNabb, and he did that. Now, that was a 5-11 football team. And Don McNabb eventually took over. I'm a little surprised that they went to Carson Wentz this early, although the opportunity to turn Sam Bradford, I was critical of Philadelphia when they signed Sam Bradford and wondered what they were doing, then moved up to get the first round. But for them to recoup a first-round pick for Sam Bradford, I think they've been brilliant.
Yeah, I think overall, when you look at that story, it worked out well for the Eagles. I knew that Minnesota was sitting on some extra picks, but obviously getting a first rounder back was a big deal. Now let's go down to Dallas, Coach, where Dak Prescott will have the reins because of the injury to Tony Romo. You've had a chance to see him in the preseason. We know that all around the Metroplex, they're basically ready to put him in the Hall of Fame. They love him so much. But what have you seen from Dak Prescott that you think is going to be successful for him, and what do you still have concerns about?
Well, I think that optimism is well warranted, but let's not slam dunk him into the Hall of Fame just yet, okay? I mean, this young man doesn't know what's going to hit him. I think the difference, too, when you go back and you look at quarterbacks that have started in rookie years, let's go back to a great case study in 2008 when Joe Flacco and Matt Ryan took over as starting quarterbacks day one. Dak Prescott, Joe Flacco went in because of injury. They did not plan on starting him, and they actually ended up starting him, went to the playoffs. He had a solid year, not a great year, over 60%, a little better than one-to-one touchdown to interception, not stellar numbers, but showed that he could handle it. The difference being is Baltimore had a great defense. They had an established running game. Dallas doesn't have those things. They may have the running game. Obviously, the offensive line is Ezekiel Elliott. It could be a huge plus for them. But that defense has to be a concern. I think more is going to be asked of Dak Prescott than was asked of Joe Flacco, than even was asked of a Matt Ryan back then. And when you look last year with Mariota and Jameis Winston, who had solid rookie years that indicate they're going to be good, solid pros, I don't think as much was asked of them as is going to be asked of Dak Prescott, because that defense is suspect.
You just brought up Mariota, and I was going to ask you about Tennessee and the idea that they want to run what they're calling exotic smash mouth when it comes to their offensive attack this year. The Titans are in a tough division, and yet I feel like they're making steps in the right direction. What are you expecting out of Tennessee and out of a second year of Mariota?
Well, I like Marcus Mariota. I think he and Jameis Winston showed that they can play in this league. Obviously, they've got to take the next step. That description of their offense fits Michael Larkin. He goes back to his Pittsburgh Steelers day. He ultimately wants to be a smash-mouth running program. But obviously, when you have Marcus Mariota and some of the things he does, they're going to open it up a little bit. It really is all about Marcus Mariota and how much better he's going to be. Yet, remember, they made the transformation to Mike Mularkey as the head coach because he was the offensive coordinator to develop Marcus Mariota. This happened to him in Jacksonville when he took over as the head coach to obviously expand on the resume of Blaine Gabbert, and it didn't happen. So, this is going to be a similar scenario. Tennessee and even Mike Mularkey, their fate's going to be tied to how much improvement, obviously, Marcus Mariota makes.
We're going around the NFL with the coach, Brian Billick. He's on Twitter, at Coach Billick. He's brought to us each week by our friends at SeatGeek. Coach, when you look at the Carolina Panthers, we know, first of all, it's always difficult to get back to the Super Bowl in back-to-back years, regardless of whether you win or lose. But how much of their success last year, going 15-1, can they duplicate this year?
Well, that's a tall task to think that you're going to go 15-1. But this is clearly, in my opinion, the best team in the NFC South. This could be one of the top two teams, maybe the top team, even personnel-wise, in the NFC. There's no reason to think that they can't get back there. Cam Newton, there's no reason to think that he's not going to turn around and again have an MVP year. He's got the credentials. They're going to stay committed to the running game if they can stay healthy. To get Kelvin Benjamin back should be a huge plus. And the defense, the front seven in particular. Now, the secondary has gone through some change. And so those that want to look at that Carolina and say, gee, what's going to happen with Carolina this year? Are they going to have that Super Bowl losing jinx and not even get back to the playoffs? If they do have some difficulties, it's likely going to be in the secondary. They drafted their second-round pick. James Bradbury is going to start for them. They had enough losses in the secondary compared to last year's team that that's an area you're going to have to watch.
One of the teams that could threaten them in the NFC is Arizona. Obviously, health matters for all 32 teams, but when you have an older quarterback like a Carson Palmer, when you have Larry Fitzgerald, you obviously need them out on the field. But do you feel like Arizona is the best threat to the Panthers in the NFC?
Absolutely. They're a veteran team, and that staying healthy is true of every team. How good is Carolina going to be if they lose to Cam Newton? So you don't wish that on anybody. And so this is going to be a good football team. It's a veteran team. I know the preseason wasn't particularly dynamic, but nobody cares. You remember the Indianapolis Colts days and their heyday with Peyton Manning. They typically went 0-4. The preseason was just not going to be important. So, I mean, it's important, don't get me wrong, but the final outcome, nobody really cares. Nobody pays attention to. I think Arizona has all the pieces in place. Yes, you got to keep Carson Palmer healthy. Can they indeed build on what was a record year for him? But most of all, I really like what they're doing in the running game. Bruce Arians, let's go back again to your Pittsburgh roots, much like the Mike Blark. He wants to run the ball, even though you got Larry Fitzgerald and Michael Floyd. They want to run the ball. If David Johnson stays healthy, this guy's pretty good now. I know Bill Belichick is saying, well, he's no Marshall Faulk. Okay. But he's not bad. This David Johnson's pretty good. They want to run the ball well. And if they can continue to build on that aspect of it, they're going to be right where they were last year.
You talk about how difficult it is to get back to the Super Bowl, win or lose, and Denver's going to try to do it with a seventh-round pick starting at quarterback. How exactly do they do the fans have confidence in the idea of trying to get back to the Super Bowl with such an unproven quarterback?
Well, you're still in the glow of the Super Bowl championship. They're going to raise that banner, and so, yeah, confidence is going to be high, and it should be. They're going to play great defense. You know, typically, you look at this, and you'd say, okay, they made the determination. We're going to play great defense. We're going to run the ball, and all our quarterback has to do is not throw 23 interceptions like our quarterbacks did last year. Now, I think there's a little bit more to that. The biggest part of that equation to me is, are they going to run the ball better? Because they desperately need to. We'll find out about Trevor Siemian. I think he's a placeholder for Paxton Lynch. Trevor Siemian, I think, could be a solid backup in this league. I followed him in his college career, which you see in the preseason. I don't see those qualities necessarily to say this is going to be a frontline championship caliber quarterback. I certainly could be wrong. And I think Dak Prescott, I think when they went out and drafted Dak Prescott and they let Brock Osweiler leave, that was your ultimate plan.
Last one for you, Coach. As you look at the Patriots, obviously they'll have the first 4 weeks without Tom Brady. They have a schedule that looks like, even with Garoppolo if, as a game manager, if he doesn't make mistakes, that 2-2 is pretty easy, maybe even 3-1. What are your expectations for the Patriots while they wait for Brady to come back?
Well, there's any number of reasons. With a better New York Jet team, with what looks to be an improving Miami Dolphins team, I think a Buffalo Bill team that could really explode onto the scene. But I've been burnt on this one too many times. I'm not picking against Bill Belichick. I usually say I'm not picking against Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. The fact that they still have they're still going to have 12 games when we're done to deal with whatever happens in the next couple of weeks. The strength for the New England Patriots, beyond the fact that they're the New England Patriots, is you keep talking about, okay, do you have to whittle down the game plan or do you have to change the game plan for Jimmy Garoppolo? Well, that's what they do. More so than any team in the league, they morph from 1 week to the next to whatever they have to be. They're the only team in the league that will literally throw the ball 50 times 1 week and run the ball 40 times the next. So they're obviously going, they're not just at the quarterback position, but the team is used to changing its dynamics in terms of what it wants to do from week to week. Clearly that'll be the task for them with Garoppolo, you know, see what kind of control he has of the offense, play good defense. The schedule right now looks like, we don't know how these teams are really going to play out, but right now it looks pretty manageable. So I think they're going to be in good shape.
He's the coach, Brian Billick. You find him on Twitter, at Coach Billick. He's a part of our Around the NFL here on the NFL Files podcast every single week. It's brought to you by SeatGeek. Make sure you download the SeatGeek app. You're looking for concert tickets, sporting events, a great way for you to make sure you're paying the best possible price for the tickets that you buy. It's SeatGeek. Coach, we'll talk to you again next week. Thanks.
All right, sounds good.
We're going into overtime next with Chad Brown, former NFL linebacker. Stick around.
Over. Overtime.
This week on Overtime, it is 15-year NFL vet Chad Brown spent time with the Steelers, with the Patriots, as well as the Seahawks. And so Chad joins us here on the NFL Files podcast. And Chad, a six-pack of questions for you. And we start here. Question number one, what's the worst part of the opening week as a player?
That your conditioning isn't at as high of a level as it will be later in the season, and you never really get your second wind during the course of the ball game.
So you're maybe not quite where you want to be, and so you start feeling it late in the game?
You know, you feel it early. Late in the season, you know, you go out there and you play, and somewhere, you know, halfway through the second quarter, you're breathing relaxed and you kind of get that second wind kind of feeling. The first week or two of the season, you are out there struggling. You've play the full preseason, you've done all the conditioning, it's just your body is just not ready for a full 60 minutes of NFL high-level regular season football.
Nice. All right, question number two in our six-pack. You spent some time here during training camp with Tennessee. What was that like?
It was an incredible experience, and to contrast that where I was last year I did an internship with the Seattle Seahawks, obviously one of the best teams, one of the best franchises in the NFL, versus this year with the Tennessee Titans coming off a 3-13 season, them really trying to build something. I think they will be able to build something good there, but a very different experience, one team that's already there, one team that's trying to be there. And then also maybe the best part of the entire experience was getting a chance to essentially shadow Dick LeBeau for an entire month. Dick LeBeau will be in his 58th year in the NFL this season. So to shadow a guy like that with that much NFL experience was literally a priceless experience. And as good of a coach as Dick LeBeau is, he's in the NFL Hall of Fame. He's an even better human being and a better person. I really enjoyed that experience and that time with him.
As you sit right now, Chad, removed from the game, what's the one thing you would go back and tell your NFL rookie self right now if you could do it?
Don't ride the highs and the lows. It's each season is a marathon, and if you are constantly riding the highs and the lows, you're going to wear yourself out emotionally. There's only so much emotion in the human body that you can tap into that reservoir during the course of the season. And to try to be as steady as you can during the course of the week and after the game and while you're watching film is going to allow you to keep as much as you have in the reserve for the game time when you actually need it. Young Chad, you know, always left the game either extremely happy or extremely sad. And come to find out when you watch the film on Monday, it wasn't as bad as you thought it was, nor was it as good as you thought it was. So just try to be steady, Eddie. Keep your emotions in check so you can tap into them when you actually need them on Sunday for those 3 hours.
Question number, let's see here. I'm on four here now for Chad Brown. He's on Twitter at ChadBrown94, part of Overtime here. Chad, your favorite quarterback that you ever got to sack, your favorite quarterback to hit?
Man, you know, I've been lucky enough to hit a lot of them. sacked Peyton Manning, strip sacked Peyton Manning, sacked Joe Montana. So that's probably the, you know, most iconic of the quarterbacks who I sacked. But, you know, if there was a quarterback who's played, you know, in the 15 years I was in the NFL, there's a strong chance I got to sack him. You know, if I were to choose just one, I probably would go with Joe Montana just because I consider him to be the greatest quarterback of all time. So what better prize than to get the greatest of all time?
Question number five. Chad, would you trade your college national championship at Colorado back in 1990 for a Super Bowl ring? It's a tough one, isn't it?
No. It's a very tough question, but I'll give the answer no. The NFL, while winning a Super Bowl, which I've never won, I'm sure is an amazing experience. To do the national championship in college is different just because NFL, you're a professional, and in college, you're an amateur. And so for a college athlete, you win that championship with guys who you spend all your time with. These are literally your brothers. It's not just your teammates like it is in the NFL. These are literally your brothers. My roommate was on the football team. I spent all my time with those guys. You know, so because of that bonding experience, because of who we are, even now later in life, you know, I will be at those guys' funerals. You know, I'll be there when their, you know, children or grandchildren are born. Because of those types of relationships, I think that makes a national championship in college sweeter than a Super Bowl championship would be.
Last one for you, Chad, in our six-pack of questions. Do you have a pick for who's going to win the Super Bowl this year?
You know, I do not. You know, I don't get into that. It's always fascinating to me, whether we're talking college football or pro football. You know, the folks who do that, and I respect those who give it a shot. There's just so much football to be played. So many wacky things can happen. You know, the Broncos won the Super Bowl last year, you know, with one of the worst offenses in Super Bowl winning history. There were points late in the season where it looked as if they might not even win their division. So, you know, so many things have to happen for it all to line up. So my guess would literally just be an absolute guess. You know what? But just for the sake of doing this, I'll go with the Seahawks on the NFC side, and I'll go with the Steelers on the AFC.
Very nice. There he is, Chad Brown. He's our guest for overtime this week on the NFL Files. He's on Twitter at ChadBrown94. Make sure you give him a follow. Chad, thanks.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
This has been a Sports Joe production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsjoe.com.